Okay, this is January 23rd, 1989. This is a Food Not Bombs tape from Keith. Part 1, News Clips.
Ron Lyons, KCBS News Time, 8:06.
Night Beat with Robert McCormick. News and views with the newsmakers and you.
Sponsored this hour by the Kentfield Rehabilitation Hospital. Good evening to you. I want to throw out a couple of statistics, a couple of numbers that affect people here in the Bay Area and in California. Talk about a few things, and all of us are touched in some way by poverty and hunger. If we are not a victim of it or living through it, we certainly see people who are virtually every day of our lives. By the way, a growing number of people who have, even with jobs in this country, are slowly slipping into poverty. Those who have children who may even be having both husband and wife working can cross over to the poverty line. We'll talk about that. 500,000 people in California who hold low-paying jobs supplement their diets with charity food. Over 2 million people in the state of California are hungry every day. Almost 4 out of 5 Californians are in favor of paying at least $10 more every year in taxes to help feed and shelter homeless people. There's another side of the coin, and that is the numerous people who are out there panhandling, asking, begging for money. Some of them get aggressive. They congregate around certain areas, and some places in San Francisco, San Jose, and Oakland, you can barely walk a block or two without being, shall I say, accosted or certainly pursued by people who claim to have various afflictions, and some of them certainly do, but others perhaps just want to get another drink. And how do you tell the difference? How many of you find it very difficult not to give money, even a dime, a quarter, when you're asked for it? I'd like to know, too, tonight during this hour, how many of you just never give anything and what the principle behind that is and what you think about the people who are out there asking you for money. They may say they're homeless. They may say that they're out of work, that they need the money for their children. Do you believe it? We'll talk about that and many other issues as well with our guest in the studio this evening, Marion Standish, Executive Director of the California Rural Legal Assistance Foundation. She is a lawyer and a member of the San Francisco Mayor's Council on Food and Hunger. Marion, thanks for coming in tonight.
Thank you.
Let's go to Golden Gate Park and talk about this situation for people. This has been in the news, and I think a lot of folks, when you hear statistics like we've just been mentioning, and there are numerous others, we're going to talk about some of these problems, say, why in the world shouldn't people be able to give away food if they got food to give and, you know, a way to give it out? How many times have we sat down to dinner at home and see all that food left and feel guilty about it and say, geez, you know, there's so many people that could, we have no way. How are we going to get it to the homeless people? Well, this is one way, evidently, that the group Food Not Bombs organization found to do it. What went on there? What's the politics behind it and the reasoning behind what's been going on out there?
Well, I'm not precisely certain what the politics are of what's going on in the Golden Gate Park or with respect to the Food Not Bombs group. I've just read in the paper probably some of what you've read as well and understand that they want to give out food. They want to dramatize the issue of hunger in San Francisco and in the country and recognize where often the nation's priorities are, in bombs and not in food. And clearly, I would agree with that position. What the issue is in Golden Gate Park and in the Haight-Ashbury, I think probably needs more discussion. I know there are two programs in that immediate neighborhood that serve people. The Haight-Ashbury Food Program is a very good program, and the One Mind Temple also serves meals to homeless and hungry people. So I'm not quite clear what the goal is of the group, and I'm not quite certain what they hope to accomplish. I certainly think that it's important to dramatize the issue, and people in our community need to know that folks are hungry.
All right. There are a couple of different neighborhood groups involved, and one in favor of this program and the idea of it, another one who feels that it draws undesirable people who don't really have to have the food. There's no way really that they don't discriminate and ask them for proof of need. They just simply give a meal to anybody who says they're hungry.
Well, I'm sure that if you and I didn't need to have food, we wouldn't choose to eat at the corner of Golden Gate Park, nor would we probably choose to eat much of the food that they have available to give away. Those of us who are fortunate enough to be able to put food on our tables enjoy eating at home with our families. We enjoy shopping for the food in the markets, and unfortunately a lot of people aren't in a position to do that. I think one of the problems poor people face, especially homeless people, and I think it's important to talk about hunger among a vast array of folks other than homeless people. Certainly homeless people are oftentimes hungry, but many other people are hungry as well, is that they have every right to eat in a dignified environment, and choose to eat in either a church or a soup kitchen that is respectful and is dignified.
Well, can anybody, virtually anybody, get a meal at a rescue mission, a St. Anthony's dining hall, a shelter of some kind, for example, in San Francisco?
There's a wonderful chart that's put out by a fellow named Tree, who lives in Haight-Ashbury, called the Free Eats Chart. And in that chart, it lists a number of programs that people can go to. Some of them have restrictions. Others have absolutely no restrictions. They all are open different times of the day. We're very fortunate in San Francisco that I think there is at least one program open every day of the week. They are not all open every day of the week. And oftentimes you have to travel a good deal in order to get to them. And, of course, if you don't get there on time, you just don't eat.
How many people would you think? We mentioned over 2 million people in California. How many people in the Bay Area would you say? That's got to be, what, 750,000 people would fall into that category? At least 500,000, I would say, wouldn't you?
Who are in need.
Who are in need of food on almost a daily basis?
Absolutely. If you look at the poverty levels of the Bay Area, where we have very, very high rents, and that is one of the key elements to people's difficulty in getting access to sufficient food, that they pay most of their money, if they're working, for rent and the hard costs of monthly living, the PG&E bill, the water bill, the rent bill. It's the soft expenses like food, which nobody forces you to buy, that often go by the wayside. And that's why many of the programs, both federal programs and charitable programs, are so important, because they do keep people afloat from month to month and, in fact, keep them in their homes, which I think is a very critical issue. If you end up having to spend money on food and can't afford the rent, you're going to find yourself on the street.
Well, who operates these? You mentioned the chart of Free Eats. Who operates the soup kitchens? Does it have to be a governmental concern or a church organization? Do some
soup
private
kitchens,
groups?
There are an enormous range of programs that provide charitable services to people. They are church groups. They are independent organizations. They are nonprofit organizations. They are people that come together and feel a great degree of compassion and need to serve the community. There's an enormous range. And in San Francisco, I think we're quite fortunate that people are so generous and so compassionate. And there are a number of food programs. Of course, there is an equally enormous need.
All right, now we're talking about something that is relatively hidden from most people, something that's very visible, those who are out there actively asking folks for money, passersby. These are the panhandlers, beggars, whatever you want to call them. Some of them are homeless, and you mentioned down at the Civic Center the other day, you ran into several of them, and they came up to you.
Well, I think the real problem, however, is not, frankly, the people that we see on the street who are asking for money to buy food or whatever it is that they're asking for. The problem of hunger is a far more insidious problem, because we have people, we have elderly people, we have adult disabled people, we have intact families who simply are holding on by a thread in terms of the income that they have from various jobs. They can barely feed themselves every month, and they are the ones that are hidden from our view. They're not on the street in any way. They're sitting at home, and they're eating crackers. They have very little in their refrigerator, very little in their cupboards. Their children are going to school hungry. Pregnant women are not eating adequately and find themselves giving birth to low-weight babies who often cost us a lot of money because they need a lot of care. Those are the people who are really in trouble, and that's the hidden price of hunger in California and in the nation.
But don't these visible panhandlers, many of whom we know, let's be honest, some of them make $100 a day doing this. I've had them tell me that and boast about the fact that they do it. They've got scams that they run, different hard luck stories and hardship stories, sympathy tales that they tell. Don't they somewhat desensitize average folks to the problem we've been talking about? And
I think that's true. I think that oftentimes people are become callous because they see somebody every day who is asking them for help, and oftentimes the press and others will pick out the one who is making gobs of money, although frankly I find that very difficult to really believe that anyone's doing very well out on the street panhandling. If they're making $100 a day, maybe they're making it one day in the week. I doubt they're doing it every day, and I doubt frankly that they can live a very decent life on that kind of revenue source. I think it's a very desperate situation to be in, and none that we would want to be in ourselves.
If they were, as we mentioned, as we do know, some of them really want the money for crack cocaine or alcohol, would you be in favor of banning that kind of activity on the streets?
Banning the peddling?
Stopping the panhandlers? I mean, they've tried to do that in some cities.
I think that crack cocaine or alcoholism is every much a disease as many other diseases that we treat, and we need to look at the disease and we need to treat it. We don't need to just remove these people from our site. That's not going to solve the problem.
All right. There are some proposals for feeding some of the people we've been talking about. We're going to look at the problem statewide and also about one thing that's going to be on the ballot in November.
95.
All right. We'll talk about another measure that doesn't even need voter approval that's being considered. And we'll take your calls as well. Our toll-free number is 800-228-5227. Do you see a hunger problem? Do you feel that there is something that we can do about it? Let us know tonight, 800-228-KCBS on the news station. CBS Nightbeat, I'm Robert McCormick, and Marion Standish is here with California Rural Legal Assistance Foundation, also with the Mayor's Council on Food and Hunger. Why are there more people on the street begging? I mean, you can't deny it, right? There's more people, it seems, panhandling these days. Now, tell us what happened. What was your experience the other day, Marion?
I hate to say my experience in the Civic Center and being asked for money at least five times in two short blocks and finding that very painful experience, quite frankly, and realizing that my contributions to individuals in the Civic Center really wasn't going to transform their lives in any significant way. It wasn't going to help them get any real amount of food, any home, or any stability, if that's what they choose to have.
This must work, though. Is that why there's more people out there? Maybe people are giving money, dimes, quarters, maybe dollars.
No, I don't think it works. I think that there is an enormous economic desperation in the United States that it has been building over the last 8 years. And it's a combination, I think, of two events that began at least dramatically in 1981 and have been building ever since. One of them is long-term unemployment, which has been plaguing the country for many years. And although we talk about employment figures improving, those figures only represent the numbers of people eligible for unemployment insurance, and we know that's not a huge number of people. Consequently, there are significant numbers of folks who are out of jobs and have been out of jobs for a long time.
Right. Now, who is benefiting from the food stamp program? Who is the government helping? We're going to ask that question in a moment, but let's take some calls
for
you. Okay. Carol in San Jose. Good evening. You're on KCBS. How you doing?
Hi. Fine. Without getting into any names or anything, but recently my husband worked on a trade show in San Francisco, and it was a food distributor. And after the show was over, they had a surplus of food left over, and they called a few food banks in San Francisco, United Food Bank, San Francisco Food Bank, and nobody wanted to take the food, and they had 8 pallets. And St. Anthony, they wanted it, in order to take it, they wanted it delivered and sorted into categories, and they wanted all the legwork done on it, and they were just wanting to give it away, and it was wonderful food. In fact, we took some home for ourselves.
Well, that's a good point. Let's point out about that. Well, what is it, bureaucracy in some of these food programs where they can't...
No, I think the fact of the matter is that most of the emergency food programs that might be in a position to take the food are very marginal programs themselves. Oftentimes they don't have freezer space, they very rarely have trucking facilities or abilities, they have incredibly small staffs. I mean, they're just not capable of dealing with a lot of spontaneous donations. Now, there are programs in the city that are capable of doing that.
Well, St. Anthony's Dining Room did take it.
And there's a group in the city that works actually throughout the Bay Area called Food Runners that will come and pick up donated food that is like the type you described and distribute it to the soup kitchens and the food banks in the city. But keep in mind, these programs are small. They oftentimes just can't handle the kinds of donations that are out there.
Do you have, by the way, a list of organizations for people who maybe they are a company or a group and they're having a party, they got the food, they want to give it away, where they can contact in advance and prepare for something like this?
Sure, I can get you that list.
That's not
a problem.
All right. Carol, thank you for making your comment.
Okay, thank you.
I appreciate it. Sheldon and Milbrae joins us. You're on KCBS, Sheldon, with Marion Standish. Go ahead.
Yes, you mentioned Proposition 95 that's to help the hungry and the homeless people.
Okay, let's talk about Prop 95. First of all, what exactly does it say, Mary?
Proposition 95 is a measure that recently qualified for the November ballot with 650,000 signatures. It was, in fact, the first measure to qualify for the November ballot. And what the measure will do is impose a new system of fines on existing health and housing code violations. It's estimated that in the first year of the fine system, we will be able to generate between $50 and $90 million, all of which will go towards programs that help the hungry and the homeless throughout the state.
Who's going to pay the fines now? For what?
Health and housing code violations, slumlords, and sanitary facilities that, like Clint Eastwood's restaurant recently that was closed down for being unsanitary, that kind of thing.
All right, Sheldon?
Well, that begins to answer my question. I was concerned that it was going to be the taxpayers that were going to be asked to pay.
No, that's actually the unique and exciting thing about Proposition 95 is that the taxpayers will not pay for it at all. Only slumlords, people who are violating the law as it is currently written, will pay.
You mean that break the law and have restaurants that are not clean and buildings that have violations of laws, they're going to pay for it?
That's right.
By the way, Sheldon.
And I'm for it.
All right, but by the way, you just mentioned you don't want to pay for it, but 4 out of 5 Californians polled a couple of months ago in a California poll said that they would be willing, they favored paying at least $10 more a year in taxes to help feed and shelter homeless people.
Well, I'm in favor of, I would be willing to pay more myself to help feed people and to shelter people because I think it's just a disgrace that in this society that we have people that it's a reflection on all of us that we can't as a society take care of people. But I like the fact that it makes some sense that there's a relationship between these fines for slumlords and for these restaurants that aren't clean. The money should go to feed people and to house people. That makes a lot of sense.
Of course, if something else should be pointed out, when these polls come out, what people actually do with the ballot box, sometimes it's a different
thing.
That's
right. It's one thing to say, I'll pay higher taxes, and it's another thing to actually vote to pay them.
Thanks, Sheldon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Sheldon.
Bob and Ukiah on KCBS. Bob, how you doing?
I'm fine, thanks, and thanks for the program. Yesterday, I received a letter from Alan Cranston saying that he had extended the commodity bill and the food stamp program and a few other things, child nutrition and so forth, for them to 2 years, calling the Food Act of 1988. And I guess, I sat down with my reader today, and we wrote a letter saying, well, that's perfectly fine and well and good, but I guess what concern I have is that no, and I mean no, disabled or blind person in the state is eligible for food stamps to receive supplemental security income in a very fluky law that goes back to 74. And I guess what I want to know is how we change that, because that doesn't, even though the commodity program is okay, the food stamps are much more dignified and have much more dignity and have much more value to them than a few beans or a little bit of rice.
I agree with you, Bob. The situation for SSI recipients in California is unique in the country, and that is, a number of years ago, they were what's called cashed out of the food stamp program. And you get a bonus check in your SSI check that allegedly would cover the amount of food stamps that you would otherwise be eligible for. It is a situation that we are looking into now again to see whether, if we reverse the cash out provisions on the SSI program, whether you would in fact get additional food stamps. Keep in mind that the amount of food stamps you get is directly related to the size of your household and your income. And so it's important to do all those calculations and see what you would come up with.
What is the average amount that a food stamp recipient gets for a meal?
It's about 47 cents.
47 cents?
Per meal, right. So keep in mind, again, the food stamp program, which is an extraordinary program, and I think it's one that we actually should be very proud of, was meant to be a supplement for people and not to, meant to be the sum total of their ability to purchase food.
Now, supposedly, one statistic is that 3.5 million Californians are eligible but don't...
Actually get them. That's right. There are enormous numbers of people who are eligible for the food stamp program but do not
participate. Why does that happen? Well, they just choose not to.
No, I think there are a number of reasons. I'd say the biggest reason is that people are stigmatized by the food stamp program. And even though all of us benefit from the program, and certainly at a time of need we would benefit from it, people are uncomfortable either going to the food stamp office, which in San Francisco is now combined with the general assistance office. It's a very demeaning experience. It's a 12-page application. You need almost a college degree to finish it. And it is a very complex and burdensome program.
And here the flashback abruptly cuts off, but I think we may be able to find more of it, and I'll look for it for the Sunday show. Until then, well, join me again, and you'll hear more.